Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Back in 2018, Trump's Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported the parents back to their home countries while keeping the kids in the United States, separating and destroying hundreds of families. It was heartbreaking. And years later, hundreds of families still have not been reunified. I recently learned about an organization that's trying to make a difference. It's El Atrolado, and it works to reunify families, providing holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in America and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice. They've reunified over 100 refugee families ripped apart by Trump's zero-tolerance policy. Once they're reunited, they help each family find legal representation, housing, counseling, whatever they need to get on their feet. Imagine having your child ripped from your arms just because you went to another country seeking a better life, and you never know when or if you'll ever see them again, and not ever seeing them again. We can't let family separations go on. It's inhumane. And if you're like me, and you believe that families belong together and immigration should not separate them, then join me in supporting El Atrolado and donate today. You can find the link to donate to El Atrolado in the description of this episode, or go to gun.fm/charity and donate today. You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities both in person and virtual. The best way to get involved: fill out an application at their website, elatrolado.org/volunteer. El Atrolado, ELOTROLADO.org/volunteer.
So passionate about it, I can sometimes cut the whole world off to write a verse that is perfect to me, or damn near perfect.
He's one of the greatest MCs of all time, certainly the greatest of his era, and he acquired his immense skill precisely because he was and is obsessed with hip-hop. He worked and practiced and grinded and wrote and put in the sweat equity to become an unbelievable talent. He didn't pop out the womb rhyming. He constructed his talent through years of work and his obsession with hip-hop and with getting better as an MC. And that is why we're all obsessed with his music now. Kendrick Lamar on Touré Show. I want this to be a place where I talk to successful people to find out what makes them successful. I want to kind of look into your mind and see what your key tactics are and hear what your best attitudes are and understand your perspective on what you've mastered. I was so excited to be able to interview Kendrick, and we cover a lot of ground in this conversation. What was it like being with Obama in the Oval Office? How do you practice emceeing? What are his favorite words? What's his best verse ever? What's his greatest record ever?
All right. I say that's one of my greatest records because it gave these kids an actual voice and an actual practice to go out here and make a difference.
He talks about how we actually get to being all right, politically speaking, and the impact of seeing dead bodies when you're a kid, and the impact of the increasing racism in Trump's America.
You know, it's something that me and you already knew that was there, but now it's televised, you know, on you know, major platforms. And it just built another fire in me.
This interview was conducted backstage at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, hours before a hot Kendrick show. It was originally done for the cover of ID magazine, but I had to get you guys the whole interview. I had to hook you up. It's that good. I'm proud to present Kendrick Lamar on Touré Show.
You know, if I was talking to Steph Curry, I could be like, you know, so you're the best.
Yeah.
And how did you get there? You know, you did your shots, you did your running, your nutrition, whatever. What is it for you? Like, what are the elements that lead to someone becoming the best rapper of their era?
I think first you gotta just genuinely have, like, an obsessive love for music.
Yeah.
Period. And that started at a young age for me. 4 years old, just always been in the house party environment, and I just, you know, just had a love for music, hip hop, oldies, and that transferred over to me actually writing music. And now I'm listening to people that, you know, actually inspire me, Jay-Z, Nas, Biggie, Snoop, and now I have an obsessive passion for writing, you know, so. Along with being a student of the game, I have an obsessive passion for practicing. And all that has to come together is one. You just have to be obsessed with what you want to do. Simple as that.
How do you practice?
Practice. Being in that studio, writing terrible verses, writing terrible hooks. If your homeboys and your friends and people that you trust telling you that's garbage and, you know, growing thick skin, you know, getting back in there and doing it all over again, that's practice. Failing.
So, yeah, I mean, if you write, if everything you write is not dope.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even if you're a great writer, a bunch of the stuff you write is whack.
Yeah.
But most people don't have somebody around and be like, that's whack.
And then you eventually grow an ability to know when something is too far-fetched. And you know, you don't have to have someone else listen to it to tell you if it's good or not. You already know, that's not good. I can challenge myself to take that to the next level.
Yeah. Is there anything, I mean, like with Steph or whoever, like, you know, you would break down the parts of your shot. Okay, today we're going to practice follow through. Yeah. We're going to practice picking up off the dribble.
Yeah.
Right. So how do you break what you do down into smaller pieces?
Yeah. I did a lot of that in the early stages of me being in the studio and just even learning the equipment, Pro Tools, and how the mic worked and how to use my voice to inflict a certain type of emotions. This all became a time when 16 all the way to 23, me going in the studio and say, okay, today I want to see how this sound when I do a verse that actually feels like aggression. Okay, today I want to see how this hook feel. I want to see what this bridge feel like. You know, all these was like baby steps for me. And like you said, eventually, you know, some were trash and some got great, but it became a process of me just trying different things and experimenting.
You like the sound of your voice?
Yeah.
On wax?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Most MCs say no.
Yeah. You know, that's the thing that actually drove me to recording a lot. When I heard my voice play back, it definitely didn't sound like how I thought I sound, that's for sure. But it was just like magic to me. Like, damn, this device just captured what I just said, how I felt when I said it. And I was addicted to it. I wanted to keep doing it.
But let's talk about All Right for a minute.
Right.
Because how do we get to All Right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we need more political power.
Right.
We need more justice. How do we as a side get to that?
How do we get to that? Unifying and knowing what we're capable of. I think a lot of times, you know, it always starts, I always go back to the community, simple as that, because I see these kids growing up without a father, so they don't have this confidence, they don't have this moral pass, you know, of knowing that they're better than the environment that they're in. So getting to our right is just installing confidence in them, you know, to let them know that I come from where you come from, and you can ultimately make a change, not just from what you're seeing around you, but from what's here, what's right here in the mind. You change that whole thing around, and that's where the concept comes about.
Take me back to meeting Obama in the Oval.
Yeah.
I mean, that must be incredible.
Yeah, that's
insane.
And
he's like, I know you, I like you.
Yeah.
Like, that's incredible.
Yeah, it's incredible from a standpoint where I just go back to the earliest memories of my grandmother, you know, speaking about the idea of a black man being in office. That's what blows me up, you know. She's passed away when I was 13, 14 years old. Being in there and talking to him and you know, seeing the type of intelligence that he has and the influence that he have, you know, not only on me but my community, it just always takes me back to the idea and reflecting on how far, you know, we have came with this idea and how far we can go further, you know.
How far we can go.
Yeah. With him even being out, you know, that was just the idea. Him being in office, it just sparks the idea of that, you know, us as a culture, as a people, we can do anything that we want to do. And we have the smarts and the brains and the intelligence that's been there since day one to do it.
I mean, your music is clearly coming from, I want to impact people.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when we make art meant to impact people, it's, you lose some of the artfulness of the music.
Yeah.
Because he's trying to make a message, be right. It a painting or a song or what have you.
Right.
So how do you maintain that balance of, I have a point, I have a message, but we're still going to keep it funky?
Yeah, great question. Music plays two ways in my head. It plays as hip-hop plays two ways. It plays as a sport, a contact sport, and it also plays as something that you can connect to, songwriting. This contact sport comes from me growing up and listening to battles like Nas and Jay-Z and listening to the aggression of Pop. That's the sport for me. I would never be able to shake that ability to have that competitive nature. That's where it can get funky. That's where I can say whatever I want, however I want, whenever I want, expressing myself and, you know, just having fun. Then the other side, showing the duality of that, showing something that people can actually relate to, you know, and connect with. And I think both of them plays together very well because it just shows this is not just a rapper trying to sell you lyrics. This is just me being a human. This is showing all the reflections of who I am, you know?
Yeah.
I have that competitive nature. And I also have the compassion, you know, to talk about something that's real.
Is the music for black people?
Is it for black people?
Yeah.
It's for the world. Music's for the world. But what do you mean when you say black people?
I mean, when I'm doing my thing, I'm like, who is the audience?
Ah, okay.
It's for black people.
Right.
You know what I mean? If white people want to come along and read my shit, great.
Right.
But black people, my first audience. Is that how you see your work?
When I made Good Kid, Mad City, I definitely would say that. Yes, because I was making that just for my community. I was making it for the dudes around the corner. So when I went overseas in London and I hear these kids that, you know, these white kids that have no idea of the block that I'm talking about and they're singing it, but they can also relate to it in some form or fashion because they have their own personal struggles. They're not seeing that the idea of starting this concept just for my community, it reached further because people pour their own ideas of what the songs mean to them. But ultimately, that initial standpoint comes from me making songs for my community.
So, okay. So when you make songs for your community and your art seems to come from,
right.
I am rooted in my community even
right.
as I get bigger and bigger.
Right.
So when you see all the white fans, mm-hmm. are you saying, what are they getting out of it? Or
yeah, that's what I was saying in the beginning. This is 2012. You know, I'm new to traveling and all this stuff. I've never even been out of Compton, let alone the U.S. You know, so I'm looking at them, you know, seeing these lyrics, and I'm saying, yeah, what do you get out of it? What are you feeling? And I just so happened to talk to the fans, you know, after the shows or at meet and greets and ask them, why this inspired you, you know? And they look at me, look at the story of Good Kid, Mad City or any of my songs as, you know, a kid trying to escape, you know, his environment however he can. And they applied to themselves, you know. One kid was, you know, abusive, drug abuse, and he was trying to escape that. You know, another kid, you know, was being bullied. He was trying to escape that. So they was pulling different things from their own personal lives into the music. And that's when I knew it was relating further than just my story.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. There's lots of different ways that people are oppressed.
Exactly.
And they can come into your music via their own way, even if they're white, they can still find
exactly
that road in.
Yep.
Can you talk about some of the books that you've read recently or years ago that had a big impact?
The biggest impact from the jump, it was always, well, I said this before, my teacher, Mr. Ange, brought this book to me. It's Malcolm X book.
Autobiography.
The autobiography. I think initially this was the first idea that even it inspired how I was going to approach my music. From the simple back of starting it from the idea of wanting to better myself, but being, you know, in this mind state of, you know, my reality, the same way Malcolm was. You know, he wasn't always Malcolm X. You know, he had to come from somewhere. He had to come from tribulation and struggle. These were the ideas that rooted my approach to music. Because while I'm writing these raps, I'm still in the midst of it. I'm still in the midst of Detroit Red, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, 16, 17 years old, and I'm looking around. But I also knew it was a sense of responsibility that I had in me that eventually would be rooted some way, somehow. And that book, you know, always carried throughout my music, simple as that.
So now, because there was what? 4 different Malcolms,
yeah,
right?
Definitely.
So now that you're here, because you said when you were writing, you felt the connection to Detroit Red.
Right.
So who do you, which Malcolm do you feel you are closest to now?
Both. It had to be both.
Well, the Red, the X, the Helhaj, Malik Shabazz.
It had to be Red. Red and X. Red and X, because it was a coming of age, you know, between them two time periods. And I feel like I'm right in the cuffs of that. You know, I'm 30 years old. You know, this is me finally recognizing my full potential, you know, as someone who not only motivates themselves, but, you know, can be a leader for those that's around them who don't have a voice.
Yeah. I mean, you're definitely a leader, and people are like needing the music, like, you know, like if you took a 4-year break, I think they would lose their minds.
Right.
I mean, it's an opportunity and a heavy responsibility,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely a responsibility, you know. Just a simple fact, you know, I'm still a human being. You know, I'm still a person. I still have family. I still have my own personal problems. But at the end of the day, I gotta figure out how to be as, you know, as much as I would like to be selfish, you know, and take on these personal things, I have to give to the world. You know, I think that's my responsibility. You know, my mistakes, the knowledge that I have, the wisdom that I have, you know, this is it's not just a job or entertainment for me. This is a lifestyle. This is, you know, what I have to offer to the world, because when I'm gone, you know, I can rest peacefully, know that I contribute, you know, to the evolution of this right here, the mind, you know?
Influencer.
Sometimes you need stories that reflect the community, the culture, the world that you love. You can get some of that on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths, where you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and how to create world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is an account of what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective, and diving into the things that we care about and the stories we want to hear that center Black perspectives. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes that celebrate the Black experience. Turn on NPR and listen to Black Stories, Black Truths, because Black stories make up what it means to be in America, and stories should never be told without us. Listen to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts. Great Expectations is a new novel from the New Yorker staff writer Vincent Cunningham. a keenly observed novel about a young black man searching for his place in the world amidst a moment of historic change. Great Expectations is about the main character David's 18 months working for Senator Obama's 2008 presidential campaign. Along the way, David meets all sorts of people who raise questions about history, art, race, religion, and fatherhood that force David to look at his life in a new way and come to terms with his identity as a young black man in America. Colm McCann says Great Expectations will be one of the most talked about novels of the year. And others have called this book epic, intimate, and brimming with brilliance. It got a starred review in Publishers Weekly, which is a big deal. And it's a coming-of-age story that takes you inside the Obama campaign like nothing else. Great Expectations is an extraordinary book available wherever books are sold.
It's a word that gets tossed around a lot these days. There is a woman who went the distance, who broke ground as the first true influencer by living a remarkable life. Her name, Elizabeth Taylor. I'm Katy Perry. This is the story of the original influencer. This is Elizabeth the First.
Elizabeth the First, the podcast, wherever you listen.
You remind me of, like, Chuck D used to talk about, you know, we want to create, a thousand gold brains, not the gold chains,
right.
You know, and Pac talked about the same thing about, I'm going to inspire the mind that will change the world.
Yeah.
And maybe he was talking about you and he didn't know you then, but right. He was talking about, but you think about that.
Yeah, definitely, man. I sit and I look at these kids, man. I look at where I was at and the ideas that I had and the ideas that I didn't know, you know, and the people I would meet, you know, like yourself or a random person in Belgium or Germany, and the knowledge I would gain. I would never expect that. And all these, you know, different aspects immediately opened up what's up here, you know, and not knowing that as a 13-year-old kid, 14-year-old kid, that amazes me. And that just gives me more fire to sit up there and you know, give my words to these teenagers out here. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, they look for it, they want it. You know, they just don't have the person to trust, you know, to give it to them. So installing that trust is first for me.
I mean, you talk about words as a lyricist, you know, like the language is your keyboard, right? So what are some of your favorite words?
Some of my favorite words. That's a great question. Perspective.
And why?
Perspective. That's one of my favorite words recently, these last 2 years. To understand that is to have compassion for the next person. Because your story and the things you say and the things you believe in may not move the next person, whether for personal reasons, morally, or just simple, you know, from what they've been through. You have to understand their perspective in order to have that compassion. It's simple. And that's the number one favorite word. My other favorite word would be discipline. Discipline. I love that word because it shows who you really are. You know, there's so many vices in the world, especially being in the entertainment business. You know, you're exposed to so much at any given time. So whatever you need, it's right there in your face. But how much discipline you have when the camera's off, you know, when the lights are off. That inspires me, you know, how to restrain that. And that shows who you really are.
And you sound like you have a lot of restraint.
I had to gain that.
You're still working toward that?
I had to earn that, yeah. Had to earn that. And that right there is the hardest thing that's known to man for me personally. And I look around and I see, you know, other personalities and characters. It's the hardest thing, that discipline, no matter what it is. You know, it could be drinking, it could be eating candy, it could be obesity, you know. To restrain that and to pull back from that and to control yourself, that is ultimate. That is the ultimate power.
to control yourself.
Yeah.
It's very hard.
Yeah, it's definitely.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like you're on top of it. Like other MCs, you know, are, you know, photograph of them doing something they shouldn't have done here. Yeah. You know, they got to make a song about, you know, I'm sorry I did this over here, yeah. what have you. And it seems like, you know, Kendrick is in his lane. He's in, if you don't see him on stage, he's yeah. on, he's in the studio.
Right.
And he's not, he's, you're not going to hear, you know, the reports of he, you know,
yeah.
did this in a club or that, you know, is that accurate?
Well, that's easy for me. the idea of being a celebrity, that's easy for me. You know, I know where I come from, where I'm rooted, and just my personality in general, that's ultimately not who I am. You're not going to find me in them type of arenas to even bother that idea. So a more personal level for me, something that a discipline I will have to control is the idea of learning how to balance the time between my family that care about me and love me and the ultimate chase of spreading this message and spreading these words. I could be in the studio all day and turn the phone off, you know, and completely zone out because I feel like this is what I was chosen to do and I can't let anyone get in between it. So learning how to balance that with people that care for me is my struggle, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's being 100% honest
mm-hmm.
because I never get the love that my mother, you know, has given me, you know, through someone else or even through music. I have to understand that, but I'm so passionate about it. I can sometimes cut the whole world off to write a verse that is perfect to me or damn near perfect to get that word across.
What's the perfect verse that you wrote?
A perfect verse, I won't even say perfect because I'm still chasing that.
Okay.
The day I write a perfect verse is the day that I completely drained all my energy in what I do creatively. It would have to be something recent. So I would do something like on the damn album, a song called Fear. First, second, and third verse is probably one of the best verses I've written.
Fear,
yeah. It's completely honest. It's everything that I feared from the time I was 7 years old on the first verse. Second verse, I was 17. And everything I feared when I was 27. Yeah. These verses are completely honest with myself and a growth, you know, in becoming a man. Yeah.
Let me get you to respond to something that has been lobbed at me and my work. There's a bunch of essays on the net,
yeah.
Black women saying Black women are absent in Kendrick's music. You know,
yeah.
Not saying
right.
misogynist like we heard before other MCs, but just he does not, we don't exist in his stories. What is your response to them saying that?
Don't exist in the stories. That's a trip.
I mean, is it a fair critique or no?
That's not a fair critique.
Okay.
At all.
Okay.
In fact, to even answer the question, I would need to know exactly where, you know, the disgruntled part, you know, come from. You know, I actually don't really understand the question to even answer.
Okay. Okay.
You know, just the simple fact that I come, you know, from where I come from, all I know is Black women, to be 100% real with you. Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean,
You know, it's
yeah.
one of those things
yeah.
as, I mean, maybe you need a woman to further the conversation because
yeah.
I'm blind to what
yeah.
I didn't you know, I listened to the music, I'm
yeah.
like, I didn't know that you would.
I would definitely need a woman to break that down to me because, you know, I've made some pretty connecting songs, you know, about women and Black women in particular. Even early off in my career, I remember a record called Keisha Song.
Yeah.
Section 80. Yeah, I mean, I would have to sit down and talk to a woman.
Can you talk about your meditation practice?
Meditation practice. I need 30 minutes a day of just reflecting on the moment. When you're in this business, everything is... Years go by so quick, man, because you're working and you're also planning for more work within the next 6 months to a year. So for me, I have to just sit down and reflect on what's going on for at least 30 minutes.
Do you always do it in the morning, in the afternoon, at a certain time, or just whenever you can get it in?
Morning. I gotta get up early. I gotta be up early. I go to the studio and be up all night before I lay down. I gotta reflect.
What time do you normally get up?
Man, to be real with you, it's not even the act of getting up, because I might be in the studio 6 in the morning, you know, and take a 4-hour nap, then get back up and start the day again.
I mean, you know, growing up where you grew up, you saw people get murdered.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw anything like that. Most people never saw anything like that. What does that do? What does it do to you?
What it did to me, it completely was chipping at my confidence. That's for sure.
Chipping at your confidence?
Chipping at the confidence.
What do you mean?
This is the thing that I remember about being in school, and this is something that I always try to remember when I go to schools and I talk to these kids. You know, you have these, you know, successful people, you know, that come around you and tell you what's good and what's bad in the world and how you end up dead or in prison and things like that. But from our perspective, it didn't really mean shit to us, you know, because, you know, you're telling us all these positive things, but when we walk outside this door and we see somebody's head get blown off, that shit just, whatever you just said just went out the window, and it just chips away at the confidence, and it makes you feel belittled, you know, in the world. The more violence exposed to a kid, it just chips away at it, or it can make you, you know, but for the most part, the kids that I was around, it broke them. It broke them to indulge in it. It broke them to say, fuck everything. I'm going to do what I got to do to survive. And before I let it chip away at me 100%, I was making my transition to music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not everybody has that avenue available to them.
No.
Just in general, how do we... Because you said you were on a track to death or prison. How do we... As a community, as a society, how do we get fewer black men going to prison?
How do we get fewer black, installing that confidence again? Installing the confidence. That's it. And I always say this. It starts with the kids. I mean, our generation is already in our ways. All we can do is focus on the next generation. You know, don't look at these kids and say, go play on the playground. You know, like we was taught, go eat some ice cream. No, sit them down and make them, you know, understand what's going on in the world right now and how they have, you know, all these abilities and accessible, you know, avenues to be great rather than to fall victim in, you know, what's around them. We don't have that.
But if you feel you're great, you have that confidence.
Right.
But still, I can't get a job.
Right.
I can't get, you know, this, that. Yep. And the police stay over here as opposed to the nice neighborhood where the kids smoke weed out in public, no problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, there's systemic things
that
have to be combated as well.
Exactly. And from my perspective and speaking on a personal level, this is where the people, these rappers that come from these communities and these celebrities and people with money that come from these backgrounds, this is where we have to be in place. And this is what I'm doing. You offering these jobs, you putting YMCAs inside your community, and you giving jobs to these cats that, you know, don't want to be hired, that can't be hired anywhere else. You make the opportunities, and that's what I'm doing personally. I can't sit out. I got too many homeboys that, you know, that have on that third felony, I mean, two felonies, and can't get a job. So I have to take the initiative and do for them, you know, and knowing, I'm sure enough and believe that them opportunities will spread, because once I put the power in their hands, they can put it in the next, and they can put it in the next. I think the concept and the idea is so far-fetched that people can't believe that it can change that way. But it has to start with one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Can you say, just to finish the thought, like how many people who you've hired, who just a number who may not have other opportunities, who you've given them opportunities?
Yeah, several dozens.
Several dozen.
Yeah, definitely. Um, from the idea. Well, for me personally, everything starts from the youth. You know, we have this thing going on inside the city where it's a youth center that we're building. And these cats are already working and already on the grounds inside of parks, you know, and making honest pay. And they're feeling good about themselves because they know they're doing something to further the next generation. This is the confidence. You know, they're not just making money and making a living. Now it's installing something that they can be proud of, you know?
I mean, Compton is changing a lot.
Yeah.
Y'all got the hot young mayor.
Yeah.
You got the money that Dre putting in the community. Mm-hmm. You know, Venus and Serena are contributing. You're contributing.
Definitely.
You know, and all of y'all and more are role models for folks.
Right.
Can you talk about how you see Compton changing from the seeds that people are already been putting down?
Yeah, more opportunities. More opportunities. They see that people actually care, you know? We didn't have these opportunities for someone from their community to be vocal and be present, you know? There's a lot of people that are scared of their own people, you know? I know the gang culture is still there, but you can't be scared. You gotta be there. You have to. Because it shows confidence not only in yourself, but those that's around you that's in the neighborhood to say, okay, he still come back and touch us and provide opportunities. We're with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people mm-hmm. want a reason to hate you. Don't give them that reason. Don't give them that reason. And what's going on now is just a transformation of us not being scared of where we come from. And that idea is going to get passed on.
I mean, that's the heartbreaking thing to me when I see us scared of us.
Yeah.
You know, but we are partly culpable for our problems, are we not?
Yes.
In what ways?
In what ways? We look in our communities and we see what's going on, you know. We know that selling drugs are bad. We know that the gang violence is bad. We know that these concepts weren't our ideas, you know, we know they stem back way before our time.
Yeah.
But within knowing this, we have to also put in practice that we know this, you know? And these are the ideas that I instilled to my homeboys the time when I came back from Africa. We know what's going on around here, but we continue to do it. You know, it's just as much amount of struggle, even more going on back in Africa. They have no opportunities.
Right.
We have opportunities. Why we still moving the same way we move, you know? So it's about taking responsibility, you know, in what we're going through and recognizing it first.
I know when I went to Africa, blew my mind, changed me. First time you went to Africa, how did it change you?
Man, I knew I wasn't tripping because everybody in the team, when we was getting back on that bus, we were like, it feel weird going back, right?
going back. I don't want to leave.
Yeah, it was just a weird feeling, man. And it was just one of them things, man, where you just, I mean, I'm sure you know, it's hard to explain to a person that's never been, but it's just a feeling, man, of a nurture, you know? And it just changed my whole process and my whole concept about where I'm from. I was only thinking about Compton, you know, in our small little corners, but the world is just so much more bigger than that.
I mean, for a lot of MCs, going from, you know, the block to the world changes their music.
Yeah.
Have you seen it change your music?
Yeah, definitely. Going back to the word perspective, I'm not only talking about, you know, my own personal problems coming to the community, coming up in the community, but now I can reflect on this person, that person, from here, from there, and make it to where it still feels intimate. You know, I found out a way to still make that connection, even if it's not even my story. Yeah.
Talk about perspective. I mean, just back to the Oval Office.
Yeah.
Is it a head trip to go from the guy there was like, I am a fan of yours,
yeah,
to the next guy like, you are the part of the problem in America?
Right. It's a complete mindfuck, man. It is a complete mindfuck. And if you don't have the mental stability of knowing who you are and what you're capable of, you're gonna immediately be brainwashed by that idea again of you are a part of the problem. You know? Talking to Obama and the craziest thing.
We live in a world where you can get anything you need delivered to your door thanks to DoorDash. If you don't want to do the dishes or you feel a little sick, let DoorDash bring dinner tonight. My family uses DoorDash all the time because it connects us to our favorite restaurants without us having to drive. Last night, we got some Indian food for my wife, some gumbo for me, and sushi for the kids. And everyone was happy, and we didn't have to do the dishes. The process of ordering was quick and easy, and I love DoorDash for real. So I was so happy to do this for them because I'm a customer, because I know DoorDash is your door to more. Must be over 21 to order alcohol. Alcohol available only in select markets. DoorDash, your door to more. Download the DoorDash app now to get almost anything delivered. In my mind, the greatest author of the 20th century is Toni Morrison. And her greatest novel is Song of Solomon. A mesmerizing coming-of-age masterpiece that is gorgeously written and has captivated readers around the world. The protagonist, Milkman Dead, was born shortly after a neighborhood eccentric hurled himself off a roof in a vain attempt to fly. For the rest of his life, Milkman is trying to fly. As Morrison follows Milkman on a quest to uncover his roots and find the place of his family's origin, she introduces an entire cast of strivers and liars and assassins and the inhabitants of an amazing, beautiful, fully realized black world. The New Yorker said Morrison moves easily in and out of the lives and thoughts of her characters, luxuriating in the diversity of circumstances and personalities. Toni Morrison is a genius. She's one of the greatest writers of her time, of the century, and Song of Solomon is her greatest book, in my opinion. It's a must-read that will ignite your imagination and show you what the best possible fiction writing is like. And it's a timeless tale that will stay with you after you've turned its final page. When you get to the climax, you will feel it in your heart. Available now at tonimorrison.com. or wherever books are sold.
The thing he said was, wow, how did we both get here?
He said that to you?
Yes. Blew my mind away. Blew my mind away. Because, you know, we look at people, you know, so, you know, superior, you know, and I can't give just the ultimate respect to him. And he's sitting up here dealing with all these different issues and work. And at the same time, he has to reflect on, wow, and look around the same way I'm looking around. That blew me away.
What else did he say to you? What else did y'all?
The main thing that always sticks with me as well is the work that has to be done when he's outside of the office, when he's, you know, his term is up. And that made me understand the idea of, it don't start and end here, you know, because we have a black president in the office. There's so much more work to do. And he understood that. He told me he understood that. There's so much more work to do. This is the idea. Same way he's talking about Pac. This is the idea that sparked the idea of us getting out here as a community and knowing that we have the power to have our own voice and to make our own change. Mm-hmm. And when he told me that, it just gave me, you know, confirmation again that it doesn't stop. We have to keep pushing. You know, we can't just celebrate because he's right here. We had to celebrate him while he's gone.
What, I mean, from that conversation, what did you say that stands out in your memory that made him laugh or reflect or what have you?
I guess, man, it was really going back to what he said to me and just basically replying, yeah, you're right. How did we get here? I think I cursed too. How the fuck did we get here?
You said that?
Yeah. Because, I mean, it's just a surreal moment, man, when you have two black individuals and you know, knowledgeable individuals, but also come from, you know, these backgrounds where they said we had never touched, you know, grounds inside, you know, these floors and these walls. I think I also was about to perform Mad City and then Kill My Vibe and these records like that, and these had curse words and things like that. And I'm looking in the crowd and, you know, I'm not saying the curse words, but the people are, you know, and just to know that hip-hop, you know, is in this building. And me being able to explain to that, you know, him, how much I'm appreciated, you know, of being a part of it, being hip-hop, being a part of it, you know?
Do you think about you're a little, in terms of hip-hop, mm-hmm. you're a little late to the party?
Yeah.
There was a period when they were making a lot more money and were more famous. There was a period it was more artistically.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah.
Right?
Right, and we right here.
And you think about that?
Yeah. You know how I think about it? Because my mom's remind me all the time. She say, nigga, don't you remember? You, matter of fact, you don't remember. But nigga, it was a time where they thought hip-hop, rap, she said like this all the time. They thought it was a trend.
Right.
I couldn't believe that.
Right. Oh, no.
She tells me this all, I still can't believe that.
Oh, I had that argument with my parents until Quincy Jones's album came out.
Yeah.
Back on the block. And then they were like, well, if Quincy's into it, then.
Exactly. Right. I couldn't believe that. She was like, yeah, it's supposed to last it for a year. I was like, you serious? Yeah, she said, do your research. Lasted for a year. And look at me right now, carry on the legacy and the culture, you know, being in this building right here, right now. It's mind-boggling to know that people didn't appreciate the art form of poetry and motion and expressing themselves and having a gateway to express themselves other than putting a gun in their hand.
But even after that, you know, we had Pac,
mm-hmm.
Big, you know, Jay, Eminem, you know, the culture is rising,
yeah.
You know, the... After them, you know, the more money is being made, and then, you know, the record business stops making so much money. You know, I mean, you don't really have an artistic peer.
Right.
Any other period you'd have will be Kendrick and Jay, or Kendrick and whoever. But you kind of stand alone.
Well, I appreciate that.
So, no doubt. But, I mean, I get to the point of, like, you know, if you have been born, you should have been born earlier.
Yeah.
At this level of ability.
Right. Well, I always say this, man. The best way to describe the art form and you know, the blessing and the practice that I put in is me being a complete hybrid of those that I've studied and those that inspired me. Being a hybrid of that, you know, being a hybrid of Snoop, being a hybrid of Dre, Pac, Public Enemy, KRS-One, Rakim. Even to now, you know, Jay, Kanye, you know, these are people, you know, I was still fairly a teen listening to, you know. And
the last thing, just add to that list, who not in hip-hop is in that list?
Not in hip-hop? What you mean?
Yeah, oh, writers, other non-hip-hop musicians.
Easily, Michael, Quincy, Prince, who inspired me inside the household, Marvin Gaye, Isley Brothers, Luther.
And who not in music beside Malcolm? Because we already talked about
him. Muhammad Ali. All these people are parallel because they have this... I've watched, you know, documentaries and I've watched... They have the same eye. Their passion is obsessive, you know. When you talk about Muhammad Ali, when you talk about Michael Jordan, these people... I see the same thing that I feel when I watch them, you know, in art form. And I understand it. It's something that I can't really explain on paper. It's just a feeling. You can look at a person and see how much passion and drive he has for what he do and what he loves. And everybody that I've named is parallel to that.
One day, years from now, there'll be many other rappers talking to many other podcasters about their cultural heroes. And they'll be talking about Kendrick. Thank you, Kendrick, for your time, and thanks for the music, and thank you for listening. I hope you got a lot out of this conversation. I'm on Twitter @Torre and on Instagram @ToreShow. Please stop by and say hi, and if you like the show, please subscribe, rate, and review, and tell a friend. Help me spread the word about the show. Torre Show is written by me, Torre, and produced by Chris Colbert and Matt Ford in association with Cadence 13 Studios. We're beaming to you from the amazing borough of Brooklyn, baddest place in the world. We'll be back next Wednesday with more knowledge from successful folks because the man ain't shut us down yet. Join us next Wednesday when my guest will be the incomparable Black Thought from the Mighty Roots crew. He's got a lot to say about millennial rappers.
One thing that the millennial rapper is doing, and this isn't across the board. Every millennial rapper doesn't do this, but lots of them have abandoned words. There are people who are vocalists who go into the booth and don't use any words. Nothing, no audible word. It's just mumbling.
That's next Wednesday on Torre Show.